From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Ladies and gentlemen, the governor of the great state of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger!
Those who supported the recall and those who did not, those who supported me today and those who did not, I want to reach out to everybody, to young and old, rich and poor, people of all religions, all colors, and all nationalities. I want to be the governor for the people. I want to represent everybody.
Yes, it's total recall. Arnold Schwarzenegger is governor-elect of California. Today, we'll host a roundtable discussion with Green Party candidate Peter Camejo, United Farm Workers leader Dolores Huerta, California former state senator Tom Hayden, and others. Then we'll look at the story of a Canadian citizen. He was detained in the United States during a stopover for a flight back home to Canada, secretly deported to Syria, where he spent the last year in a Syrian jail. He was freed this weekend. And we'll examine a new poll that shows viewers of Fox News are less informed about the Iraq invasion than viewers of any other broadcast network. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Californians last night voted by a 54-46 margin to recall Governor Gray Davis just 11 months into his second term. They overwhelmingly elected Republican actor Arnold Schwarzenegger to replace him. Davis is the first California governor to be recalled and only the second in the nation's history after North Dakota's Lynn Frazier in 1921. Schwarzenegger easily won the vote to replace Davis with 48%. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante finished second with 32%. We'll have more on the recall in a few minutes. Meanwhile, in Washington, Utah, Republican Senator Orrin Hatch has announced he may push for a constitutional amendment to allow the Austrian-born Schwarzenegger to become president of the United States. The Constitution only allows people born in the United States to run for president. Hatch told the Salt Lake Tribune, "If Arnold Schwarzenegger turns out to be the greatest governor of California, which I hope he will, if he turns out to be a tremendous leader and he proves to everybody in this country that he's totally dedicated to this country as an American, we would be wrong not to give him that opportunity." Turkey's parliament voted yesterday to send troops to Iraq to aid the U.S. occupation, but members of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council have announced plans to meet with U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer today to voice their opposition to Turkish troops in Iraq. The Washington Post reports the U.S. pressured the Governing Council not to take a vote condemning the Turkish troops. If Turkey goes ahead with sending troops, the BBC reports it could lead to the biggest split yet between the Iraqi Governing Council and Washington. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld told the Financial Times he was not informed by the White House that it was stripping him of some of his power overseeing the reconstruction of Iraq until the decision was already made. In a sign that the Pentagon-led reconstruction is not going as planned, President Bush named National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to head the new Iraq Stabilization Group. Rumsfeld says he still doesn't know why Bush made the major overhaul. In other Iraq news, three U.S. soldiers have died. The House International Relations Committee is expected to widely approve imposing strict new sanctions on Syria today, and the full House is expected to approve the measure later this week. Already 275 members of the House and 75 senators back the legislation. The Washington Post reports the White House has sent messages to congressional leaders that it had dropped its opposition to the sanctions in a sign of the worsening Washington-Damascus relations. In other Syrian news, the nation's ambassador to Spain said today Syria would respond militarily if Israel continues to carry out more attacks in Syrian territory. The Guardian of London reports Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat suffered a mild heart attack, but tried to keep it secret because he feared it would create panic. The Guardian reports the 74-year-old leader disappeared from the public view last week, and when he appeared, his health had deteriorated greatly. His face was pale. He'd lost weight. He was almost inaudible, and he had trouble standing for more than a few minutes. Publicly, Palestinian officials say Arafat has the flu. The Washington Post reports General Wesley Clark, who's running for president, may have broken federal election laws by discussing his campaign during recent speeches where he was receiving a fee. Since he declared his candidacy last month, Clark has continued to give paid speeches where he's received up to $30,000 per speech. In other Clark news, Clark's campaign manager, Donnie Fowler, resigned Tuesday, saying the retired general is slighting the activists who launched the draft Clark campaign in favor of Washington insiders. And the Washington Times reports Clark officially became a Democrat on Monday, 2 weeks after he announced he was running as a Democratic candidate for president. Reuters is reporting the U.S. has released the most senior Taliban leader that it had been holding in Afghanistan, apparently because he had brokered talks between the U.S. and Taliban fighters. In one of the largest media mergers, General Electric's NBC and Vivendi Universal announced today they had joined together to create a new $43 billion company called NBC Universal. The new company will join major Hollywood studio Universal Pictures, TV production unit Universal Television, Universal Theme Parks, Spanish language television network Telemundo, and NBC's network and production unit. Listening to Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
Tonight is a testament of just how important one appearance on The Tonight Show can be, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the critics said, Arnold can't be an administrator. He's an actor. Oh, Arnold can't be an environmentalist. He's an actor. Oh, Arnold can't be governor. He's an actor. And, of course, Arnold was thrilled. For the first time in his career, the critics are calling him an actor, ladies and gentlemen. This is a historic night. Apparently, we have all been wrong. It is pronounced California. Ladies and gentlemen, the governor of the great state of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, that's right. Early this morning, Arnold Schwarzenegger ended his campaign for governor in the same way he began it, with the late-night comedian Jay Leno. Californians last night voted to recall Governor Gray Davis just 11 months into his second term and overwhelmingly elected Republican candidate Arnold Schwarzenegger to replace him. Davis is the first California governor to be recalled and only the second in the nation's history after North Dakota's Lynn Frazier in 1921. He conceded defeat shortly before 10 p.m. yesterday. The cost of the election to California taxpayers is being estimated at $66 million. Voters face two questions, whether to recall Davis and who among the other candidates should replace him if he was removed. The latest results show 54% voted yes to recall and 46% voted against it. Schwarzenegger won the vote to replace Davis with 48% of the vote. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante finished second with 32%. He'll remain as Lieutenant Governor of California. Conservative Republican State Senator Tom McClintock came in third with 13%, followed by Green Party candidate Peter Camejo with 3%. Adding to the novelty were the other 134 candidates on the replacement ballot, among them a sumo wrestler, a porn actress, Flint, and an assortment of entrepreneurs who saw the race as good publicity. The 56-year-old Schwarzenegger was introduced by Jay Leno before making his acceptance speech at his campaign headquarters. Schwarzenegger will be in charge of the nation's most populated state with an economy surpassed by only five countries. Schwarzenegger's wife, Maria Shriver, brought her whole family to the acceptance speech. She was joined by her mother, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, sister to John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy, as well as former Democratic vice presidential candidate Sergeant Shriver, in a rare appearance together. The actor-turned-politician won the recall election despite accusations of sexual misconduct by 16 women and allegations that he once said he admired Adolf Hitler and wished he, too, could enjoy a stadium full of screaming fans. He denied making the Hitler comments. Voters also rejected Proposition 54, a contentious initiative that would have banned state and local governments from tracking race in everything from preschools to police work. According to exit polling, voters across the racial spectrum rejected the measure. The recall movement was launched in February by grassroots activists angered over a tripling of the state vehicle license fee and a 30% to 40% increase in student fees at state colleges and universities. The movement really took off when conservative Congressman Daryl Issa poured $1.7 million of his own fortune into the campaign to get the measure on the ballot. He was going to run himself, and then he pulled out. Schwarzenegger will take office as soon as the election results are certified, but no later than November 15th. We are going to turn now to a round table of people talking about what took place last night. We are joined first by Peter Camejo, one of the gubernatorial candidates. He got 3% of the vote, Green Party ticket. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Your reaction to Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor of California?
I think people should recognize the incredible landslide that the Republicans had. If you add McClintock's vote to Arnold's vote, and that's 61%, and then you figure that he must have lost 4 or 5% because of the attacks regarding these women accusations, the Republicans were getting like 65%. This is the utter and complete failure of the Democrats and the rejection. Now, the thing that most people aren't aware of is that this vote was the youth, working people, persons, union members were more for the recall than non-union members, even though the entire union leadership controlled by the Democrats were opposed to the recall. The poorest people of California are the ones the most for the recall. In fact, in general, progressives and liberals misunderstood and took this entire development as some sort of big, tiny Republican conspiracy behind it, when in fact it was people were just completely fed up with Governor Davis.
We're also joined on the telephone by Dolores Huerta, co-founder of the United Farm Workers of America with Cesar Chavez. She appeared with Governor Gray Davis in these closing days before the vote. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Dolores Huerta.
Hello, Amy.
Your response?
Well, you know, the governor's message never did get out to the public. If you watched any of the commercials or any, even covering the governor's appearances, what this governor did for the state of California never got out to the voters. I mean, we got an increase in unemployment insurance benefits, an increase in workers' compensation benefits, 1 million children covered under a healthy Families Program. We could go on and on. His record on women is pretty close to 1,000%. I mean, he was that good in terms. He signed 14 bills that ensured women's safety, for women's health. For the labor movement, of course, he was very good. For the environmental movement, he was very good. But the governor's message never really got out to the public. And, of course, he was very good to the immigrant population also, signing bills that would help in terms of the tuition that people who were not U.S. citizens would pay to the state colleges, et cetera. So I just think that a lot of people just didn't know what this governor had done for the state of California. And the things that he was being blamed for instance, the driver's the driver vehicle license tax, that was really a bill that had been under Pete Wilson's watch, and it had a trigger in it that it would trigger when the income of the state got so low, when the revenues got so low. So I think, of course, the energy crisis, which was a big thing that they made a big deal about that. Well, you know, that had also been talked about in the previous election. The other thing is you have to look at is the amount of money that was spent in such a short period of time. I would say yes, that the Schwarzenegger camp did out-organize the Democratic Party. But to recall a governor who really had not done anything that was illegal, certainly what Arnold Schwarzenegger has been accused of is much more illegal than anything that Governor Davis ever did. So it's got to be looked at in that perspective that that the Democratic Party was out organized. Yes, I would agree on that. But I would not say that the governor deserved what we call it, you know, in Spanish they have a term called golpe de Estado, which means a coup. And this is basically what it was, a Republican coup added on to what they did in Florida, added on to what they're trying to do in Texas in terms of erasing congressional seats for Democrats and minorities.
Tom Hayden, former state senator of California, longtime movement activist, one of the founders of Students for a Democratic Society. Do you agree with Dolores Huerta's assessment that this was a kind of coup?
I don't see the fingerprints, but I would say that responding to what Peter had said earlier, that in this case, we ought to look at the surge for Arnold here and the Republican surge, even if there was a coup behind it. It was a surge. I think, first of all, the Republicans have now their own Clinton. In other words, they've embraced sexual indiscretion wildly, and it may be the end of the culture wars. Or they'll have to be rechanneled. Secondly, middle-class populism, things like the car tax, were enough to get this off the ground. But I think there was something much bigger that Arnold fit into, and that is America's shaky place in the world and the feelings about Iraq and Afghanistan and being besieged. You saw a huge surge in young white male registration this summer, hundreds of thousands. The majority of people who are the newly registered are young white males, and I guess they're looking for somebody to fight, and Arnold fits the bill. You know, he went over to Iraq and he said, hasta la vista, baby, and it seems to me that Arnold embodies the exasperation of these voters with their feeling of America slipping in the world. Elections are always about the mechanics, yes. But when you have a blowout like this, it's got to be about something much larger, it seems to me.
But I don't think that would have been possible had he not been a celebrity. I mean, this is what, you know, he had access, of course. The entertainment media really you couldn't go any single day without seeing Arnold everywhere, on every talk show, on every, you know, just, I think that had he not been a celebrity, an actor that was very well known, you know, and people, when they see people in movies or on television, they somehow feel like they have a personal connection with them. If it would have been anybody other than Arnold, Schwarzenegger that had all of this, this history with him, I don't think that the outcome would have been the same. I think the celebrity status definitely, definitely made a difference, and especially with those young men that you're talking about, Tom, that, you know, they kind of adore this kind of bodybuilding stuff and trying to be super macho and, you know, that whole kind of, I'll call it the Aryan image. So I agree with you that those are probably a lot of the new young registrants, and maybe a lot of women also fit into that category. But had it not been for the fact that he was a celebrity, and I think that is really dangerous, because when you could think that somebody who represents the right can come in here with a lot of money, with celebrity status, and then in a very short period of time be able to unseat a governor, I think that this is a threat to our democracy.
Well, actually, there is a recall vote for a Republican governor in Nevada by other Republicans in the state. Sonali Kohatkar is also on the line with us, host and producer of Uprising on KPFK, the Los Angeles radio show. And Sonali, I'm just wondering about the media coverage, as Dolores Huerta was just referring to, and also access to the polls yesterday.
Yes, Dolores is absolutely right. Essentially, the major media, the corporate media, gave Arnold a free ride. I saw a quote in a Sacramento Bee article about in August, near the end of the article, and that was one of the few articles by one of the major media covering major media coverage, if you will. And at the end of the article, it said, according to CNN, everywhere Arnold goes, our cameras are there. Now, this was an anonymous comment, because it was really an embarrassing thing to hear a major media outlet saying, but that's essentially what happened. Essentially, everywhere Arnold Schwarzenegger went, he was followed by the major media. Now, another aspect of his appearances on the talk shows throughout the nation, no one is talking about how it is that the equal time rule was violated in order to allow Schwarzenegger to go unchallenged on these shows. You heard Jay Leno talk about how you know, it makes a big difference to be on his show, and yes, absolutely it does. The Federal Communications Commission exempted, in particular, the Howard Stern show from having to abide by the equal time provision, which is part of the 1934 Communications Act. Basically, only a bona fide news interview program can have on a candidate who's running for election by themselves. But every other program has to then allow, within the next 7 days, equal time for all other candidates in the race. Well, the Howard Stern Show applied for exemption from the FCC, and the FCC decided that the Howard Stern Show was a bona fide news interview program and therefore exempt. And this is just unbelievable. FCC said that guests that happen to be political candidates are not selected to advance their candidacies. And that I just can't believe. So after the Jay Leno appearance, Arnold appeared on Howard Stern Show. He appeared on Oprah Winfrey. He appeared on Larry King Live. And he went unchallenged. All of the debates that he took part in, well, a total of one debate that he took part in, he knew the questions beforehand. He refused to allow the press to question him, to challenge him, and they allowed him to get away with it. The other thing is that the tabloid newspapers didn't cover Arnold Schwarzenegger at all. And this is something that we would have expected. You know, an actor running for governor, there's so many, one that is known to have sexually harassed women. There's so much material here for the tabloid newspapers.
And, of course, they had covered him many times before.
Exactly. Well, what happened was they had been virtually Arnold free, except for one very interesting article about alien backing Arnold for governor, which was the only article that actually appeared about Arnold in recent times. And then a day before the election, there was Arnold's love child, because I think, you know, they sort of had to respond to all the sexual harassment. So they picked that one. And even that probably made him look better than worse. And if you looked into it, you found out that American Media, which is a corporation that owns all of a lot of the tabloids here, also owns the muscle and fitness magazines that made Arnold Schwarzenegger who he was. They bought them out from Joe Weider. And all they had done was put out a 120-page glossy magazine a day or two before the election called Arnold, The American Dream, which they were selling for $4.95. So you see, he just was basically handed this election by the major media. They had not criticized him one bit, and that's very apparent in the results. I was not surprised, because none of the other candidates got even as close to the kind of coverage that Arnold Schwarzenegger did.
Mm. Amy, this is Peter Kamel. May I be allowed to answer these three Democrats, please?
Yes.
Dolores Huerta is just in denial, as the other people who are speaking here are. The majority of the people, 78%, oppose Davis. That's 43% non-Republicans. Republicans are only 35% in California. The people's judgment of Davis is he is a complete and total disaster. He gave the energy companies $43 billion, just gave it away to reward them for their criminal activity without even in any way looking out for the people. He signed secret contracts. He gave them the right to pollute. He's a person who sells commissions for donations for his campaign. He is roundly disliked by all the people of California. And what has happened is all these Democrats, they're all in denial as to what is actually happening in California.
Peter, I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm not a Democrat at all. I can't even vote. And in fact, the major media didn't give Peter Camejo any serious amount of time to have his.
If you don't want to allow any anti-democratic point of view to be heard on Democracy Now!, if you don't want to allow the one candidate that opposed both our...
Peter, just continue to talk.
What's that?
Just make your point.
Okay. My point is this. In California, the rich have the lowest tax rate because that's what the Democrats have done. The Democrats voted unequivocal support for George Bush on the war. They have demoralized, destroyed, and weakened the progressive currents in California. And people are so fed up with them that in desperation, they were fooled by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's not just because the media did it. It's because what the Democrats have done. The Democrats have sided against the people, have betrayed the people. And you know, Dolores Huerta can say whatever she wants. Every poll shows the majority of union members favored throwing Davis out against their entire leadership. And in fact, that union leadership takes dues from their members and donates it to candidates that the workers oppose. There is an utter crisis in California politically, and it's a crisis of the Democratic Party misrepresenting the working people, misrepresenting the majority.
We're going to continue our discussion just after our break. Just 1 minute. We have to allow stations to identify themselves. You are listening to Democracy Now! That is Peter Camejo. He ran for governor, Green Party candidate. Dolores Huerta on the line with us, co-founder of United Farm Workers. Sonali Kohatkar, host and producer of Uprising Morning Show on Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. We've also heard from Tom Hayden, former Democratic State Senator in California, and coming up, we'll also hear from Willie Ratcliffe, publisher of the San Francisco Bay View, California's leading African American newspaper. Stay with us.
Gone to California, where they sleep out every night. Gone to California, where they sleep out every night. I'm gonna leave you, mama, 'cause you sure don't treat me right. Yodelay, oh, yodelay. Got the California blues and I'm sure gonna leave you here. I got the California blues and I'm sure gonna leave you here. I may ride the blind, ain't got no railroad fare. All right, son.
California Blues, Doc Watson here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we talk about total recall in California.
And today, California has given me the greatest gift of all. You've given me your trust by voting for me. Thank you very much to all the people of California for giving me the great trust. And let me tell you something, I will do everything I can to live up to that trust. I will not fail you, I will not disappoint you, and I will not let you down. For 2 months, I've been speaking out about the need of bringing back fiscal responsibility to this state. bringing back the positive business atmosphere, bringing back businesses, bringing back jobs, and bringing back our education. And very important that we need to bring back the trust in the government itself. For 2 months, I went up and down the state and listened to the people. I met good, honest, and hardworking people. People that want to raise their families here. People who want to do business here, who want to have jobs here, who want to educate their kids here. People that want to enjoy the clean air and the clean water. And I have heard your voice. I have heard your voices loud and clear. We have tough choices ahead. The first choice that we must make is the one that will determine our success. Shall we rebuild our state together? Or shall we fight amongst ourselves, create even deeper division, and fail the people of California? Well, let me tell you something. The answer is clear. For the people to win, politics as usual must lose.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, the new governor of California. On the line with us, Peter Camejo, who ran against him, Green Party, Dolores Huerta, who is supporting Gray Davis against the recall, co-founder United Farm Workers, Tom Hayden, former state senator Sonali Kolhatkar of KPFK in Los Angeles, and Willie Ratcliffe, publisher of the San Francisco Bay View, California's leading African-American newspaper. Your newspaper opposed Gray Davis's election last year, but backed Davis in the recall vote. You were against this recall. Why?
Well, this was a tough one. And I really didn't know enough about Schwarzenegger. And I really wanted to stop him, so I even went against the way I went the last time. In the last election, I didn't support Davis or the Democratic Party. And I've been a Democrat all my life, but I'm completely, along with others, fed up with what Gray Davis have done. And I certainly agree with Peter Camejo about what the Democratic Party have done in the state. And Davis gave in to the industry, oil industry, when he let them raid the state and go pay all of those bills for PG&E and all the other Enron and all the things that were happening out there, he didn't stand up and just let them rip the state off. And, of course, the governor got blamed for it. The governor was in bad shape when he got elected last time because people really failed here in California that they didn't have anybody to vote for. They didn't want Davis, and they didn't want Simon. And, of course, gridlock in California has really become a sore spot for people here. And, of course, the Democrats go back again, especially after Davis got elected. He come along with a whole larger deficit that we were in here, and it just devastated people with all these cuts and unemployment as a result of what happened in this state. And you can say what you want about Schwarzenegger, but the Democratic Party, and especially Gray Davis, is the one that really dug their own grave when it comes to Democrats in this state.
Tom Hayden, your response both to Willie Ratcliffe and also Peter Camejo.
Well, I was going to say I agreed with Peter Camejo's first comments wholeheartedly, but I'm a bit offended at the accusation that everybody here is a Democrat and in denial from a Green Party candidate who got 3% of the vote. I think that the election may have been lost before it began because Gray Davis did abandon the progressive wing and the grassroots constituencies of the Democratic Party in his first term. I experienced that firsthand as a state senator, watching the bills that he vetoed, watching his positioning.
he took the advice of the mainstream Democratic consultants in the 90s, which was to move to the right, to raise money from the corporations and financial institutions, the special interests, take the Democratic voters for granted, and concentrate on the so-called soccer moms and the Republicans. And in the process, even when he signed good legislation that Dolores has mentioned, the health care for children and so on, it was so exasperating for the advocates that he didn't win their hearts and minds. You never knew if he was going to sign the bill. It took Dolores getting up and marching 1,000 miles to get that farm worker bill signed just last year. So after he was elected with reelected with 47% of the vote against an unknown Republican opponent, I think Republicans smelled blood in the water. They were against him anyway. He had offended them by kind of invading their primary, and he had lost his Democratic support. So come the recall, which was unexpected according to these Democratic consultants, he didn't have any Republicans, and he had to scramble to try to reconnect with his own Democratic base. And therefore, it doesn't surprise me that he got about the same vote yesterday that he got when he was elected governor by less than 50%.
Last night in Cruz Bustamante's concession speech, he actually talked first about Proposition 54, the contentious initiative that would have banned state and local governments from tracking race and everything from preschools to police work. This is what Cruz Bustamante said last night.
But we have something to celebrate tonight. We have this victory on Proposition 54. I know we're all primarily gathered here tonight about the recall, but rest assured, we're going to have a little bit more to say about that later. But the most critical issue here on the ballot today was Proposition 54, who put vital services and health at risk here in California. And the numbers that we are seeing tonight is showing that we're going to defeat Proposition 54 by a wide margin. This is a dramatic victory. It marks a dramatic turnaround for this state. Finally, California is saying no more wedge politics. Yeah. Californians heard the message that Proposition 54 was bad for health care, bad for public safety, and bad for education. And Californians rejected Proposition 54 because they agreed we can't afford to put our health and our citizens at risk. They want us to use all the information that we have to make sure that we prevent the spread of disease in California. And Californians rejected Proposition 54 because they believe that discrimination is wrong in California.
Cruz Bustamante, not very often talked about in this campaign, though he did run for governor and he remains lieutenant governor. Dolores Huerta, can you respond to Prop 54? We only have a minute now, but also to what Peter Camejo said about Democrats who are supporting Gray Davis being in denial.
Well, I think that Peter Camejo is totally wrong. I wish that he would attack the Republicans with as much vehemence as he does the Democrats, because if this would have been a longer campaign, I think it would have been very different. If this would have been on the March ballot, it would have been very different, because we would have had a chance to organize. And I'm not saying that Democrats are perfect. I mean, thank God we've got people like Barbara Lee out there, you know, and people that will stand up against the war in Iraq and these other things. But I think when you look at the record, compare Democrats and Republicans, you see a very, very, very big difference. In terms of Cruz Bustamante, I felt that he never should have ran in the first place. I myself personally did not endorse him. I think that he took away from the campaign, and there was much politics involved in the campaign on the whole driver's license issue for undocumented immigrants, and I think that it was very present. Racism was very present in the campaign. You know, we have a lot of work to do, and I just like to remind everybody that when the United Farm Workers started, we had a Republican governor, Reagan, a Republican president, Richard Nixon. We continued to organize, and of course, it was not until Jerry Brown was elected that we were able to get laws that helped the farm workers get union contracts. So I don't think that we should ever delude ourselves to think that there's not any difference between the parties, because there is a great amount of difference. And thank you very much for having me, Amy. I'm going to have to go run and catch a plane now. So thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Dolores Huerta, co-founder of the United Farm Workers of America. Finally, Peter Camejo, where you see politics in California going right now with Arnold Schwarzenegger as the new governor of California?
It's not totally clear. He's very carefully hidden his platform. I think the first step the Republicans will do now, since the people who voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger was primarily non-Republicans, is to consolidate the defeat the Democrats have taken here. So we don't know what he will do exactly. But I think it's more of the same, continuing policy, pro-Bush. But I really do want to repeat how the Democrats here opened the door and, in effect, invited the Republicans in. Bustamante was betrayed by the Democratic Party. They wouldn't raise money for him. They wouldn't support him. All the Democratic Party leaders who came to the state went to support Davis, did not support Bustamante. Dianne Feinstein said she would not vote for Bustamante while she's coming out for vouchers and for racial profiling. She votes for the Patriot Act. So the Democratic Party is in disarray. It has no clear position. From a progressive point of view, we had a panic that set in, people just desperately trying to stop the Republicans. It lowered the vote of the Green Party, but nevertheless, we made enormous headway in this campaign. We got enormous respect and sympathy from the people. We participated in six televised debates, first time that a third party was allowed in televised debates for governor in the history of California. So we feel very positive about it. We want to work with the progressive Democrats to try to defend democracy and a progressive agenda in California, but it's very difficult when they are, as others have pointed out even here, or are Democrats, that they have, in effect, turned their backs on their people.
Well, I want to thank you all very much for being with us. That is Peter Camejo, ran for governor in this recall race. Dolores Huerta, Tom Hayden, former state senator, California, Sonali Kohatkar of KPFK, and Willie Ratcliffe, who is the publisher of the San Francisco Bay View, California's leading African-American newspaper. You are listening to Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll be looking at a study that's come out that shows that those who watch Fox News know the least about the invasion of Iraq. But first, we're going to hear the story of a man who traveled through the United States making his way home to Canada and was picked up by immigration and sent back to where he was born, where he had fled from, Syria. Stay with us. California Dreamin', Mamas and Papas here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Mara Rahr has returned home to Canada. The Syrian-born Canadian citizen was deported to Syria by U.S. officials. He spent 374 days in a Damascus prison without charges. This is his story. On September 26, 2002, he was in JFK Airport on a stopover flight from Tunisia back home to Montreal. He was detained and interrogated for 9 hours without a lawyer. Officials claimed Arar had ties to a terrorist organization. He was then detained at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. No one heard from him until a week later, when Arar made a desperate and emotional phone call to his mother-in-law, telling her he'd been jailed and needed help. The next week, U.S. officials deported him. He was sent first to Jordan and then to Syria, where he had not lived in 14 years. Today, Mahir Arar is home in Montreal. Upon his return, he said, "I'm very glad to get back home, and I'm so excited to see my family again. My kids grew up about a year." Arar is 33 years old. We are now joined by his brother on the telephone, Bassam. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning.
Well, can you share your reaction with seeing your brother now?
I'm really very happy to see him. I'm glad he's out and everything is cleared to him. You know, nothing clear to him, but it's all the charges being dropped, nothing, you know, against him. He's very happy, and my mother, she's very happy too. And the time we met him, it was more emotional and crying with the family. We haven't got time to see him much, you know, and talk with him much, you see. I can't say more things because I haven't discussed with him what really happened with him, because he's been visited by many people and congratulating him and has been out so far.
Well, we're also joined in the studio by Dalia Hashad, who is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, who has been talking about this case for the last year.
Okay.
I was wondering, Dalia, if you can start off by saying, explain, when he went from Tunisia to the United States, he did not stop here out of the airport. He was just changing planes?
That's correct. He was changing an only plane in a transit, and he's coming back home to Montreal.
Yes, he was coming in from Zurich on a way home from vacation from Tunisia, and literally just walking through the JFK transit hall.
That's correct.
He was apprehended by INS. It's worth noting that he was carrying and traveling on a Canadian passport.
That's correct.
And yet he was still deported back to Syria.
That's correct. He was deported. Yeah.
Now,
detained in a state, and he was not. The authority did not notify the Canadian authority that they were holding a Canadian citizen with them. That we had to look for him.
Canadian Solicitor General Wayne Easter has ruled out a public inquiry to determine how Arar was deported from the United States. MPs from all political parties, including the government benches, have called for an inquiry into the possible role of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in the U.S. detention and deportation. A recently retired senior foreign affairs official who handled the diplomatic aspects of the Arar case said senior U.S. officials, including Secretary of State Colin Powell, have privately said they acted on intelligence supplied by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
This is problematic.
That's what we really heard, you know. That's what we know so far.
I'm really disturbed by the prospect of U.S. officials deporting people. I mean, putting aside the fact that this is a Canadian citizen who was deported to Syria, there are serious problems with the United States deporting people who are in this country, whether as immigrants or whether just passing through, and saying that they're hanging the hat on the fact that they have some kind of information that this person is somehow connected to terrorism. If you have enough information to charge someone with a crime, then charge that person with a crime. But if you haven't, you have no business deporting people. Furthermore, it doesn't make sense, if you're looking at this as a security matter, to deport someone back away from the United States if you're concerned about them being a terrorist threat. You're going to deport someone away from where you have no ability to surveil, to watch, to monitor.
And why did he leave Syria to begin with?
Well, Bassam may be able to better explain this than me, but it's my understanding from reports that he left as a very young man, as a teenager, and he had avoided compulsory military service as a teenager, and so it was not necessarily safe for him to return back to Syria.
Is that why he was jailed? Bassam?
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know the reason why he was jailed so far. We don't know any of the accused, what he was deported for in the same time.
American officials are claiming, there has been some noise, that he was arrested in Syria on terrorism charges and his connections to terrorism. But this is coming from American officials. I don't think this is a trustworthy charge, and it hasn't been substantiated.
And the U.S. government is calling the Syrian government terrorist.
I believe they have nothing in Syria. They didn't have anything against him. There was no charges, nothing. So
that's
far.
Right. Bassam brings up another great point. This man has not been charged in Canada. He hasn't been charged in the United States, and he has never been charged in Syria with any crimes. And yet he was held for well over a year. I believe the only reason he was released was because of diplomatic and international pressure put on Damascus.
Hmm. The issue of Canadians traveling in the United States that provoked the Canadian government to warn Canadians about going into the United States under the USA Patriot Act. Did this case have to do with that?
Absolutely. After this case, we saw the Canadian government warning.
They were deporting the people because under what I call profiling them, plus the who was born, outside Canada and who became a natural Canadian citizenship by Canadian citizen and naturally, So they were profiling the people under their native land. There were four countries that were singled out and put on hold and asked them many questions and fingerprinting them, who walking into the state. That's what really happened in the beginning. That's what we know as far as I know,
How is Maher Arar's health now after being in jail for a year? Bassam.
He's very weak. I cannot say more than that because we're going to take him to see. Well, he feels fine so far because he's fine. He's being with us. He's make him more fine. He's happy. He's happy to be with the family, especially with his wife and kids.
Hmm. How typical, Dalia Hashad, is Maher Arar's case?
Well, the racism that we see is certainly typical of the United States government's policies. It's a bit unusual that this man, who is a Canadian citizen, was deported back to Syria simply while he was in transit through JFK. However, it's important to note that the U.S. is treating people who are Canadian citizens, who were naturalized Canadian citizens, but of Arab ethnicity, born in Syria, born in Jordan, born in Lebanon, as Syrian, Lebanese, and Jordanian, and other Arab countries, for the purposes of things like special registration. This is a government that insists upon racial, ethnic, and religious profiling. And so to them, the most important thing is, what is your religion? Where do you come from?
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Bassam Arar, brother of Maher Arar, who's just returned to Canada. Dalia Hashad, attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. Has the U.S. government made a statement about their having deported Maher Arar to Syria and in subsequent jailing for a year?
It's interesting. The U.S. ambassador to Canada, Paul Salucci, has been quoted. Actually, the Globe and Mail had an article out quoting him as telling private Canadian audiences that Canadian law enforcement did not want Maher Arar back in their country, that they were concerned about Maher Arar and they had been investigating him, trying to mislead the public, while truly Canada was angry about the way Maher Arar and other Canadian citizens were being treated at the hands of a U.S. government insistent on racial, ethnic, and religious profiling.
Well, again, thank you for being with us as we move into our last segment. Thank you. And we hope to speak to Maharar himself soon. Our last segment today is a study that was just done based on a series of 7 nationwide polls this year, revealing that a majority of Americans have had significant misperceptions, and these are highly related to support for the invasion of Iraq. The polling conducted by the Program on International Policy at the University of Maryland and Knowledge Networks also reveals the frequency of these misperceptions varies significantly according to the individual's primary source of news. To go through the findings with us, Clay Ramsey, Research Director of the Program on International Policy at University of Maryland. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
So can you tell us what you found? Who watches what and what do they understand?
Essentially, we found that 60% of Americans believe one or more of the following things, that weapons of mass destruction have in fact been found by U.S. forces in Iraq. The second one is that clear evidence has been found that al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were working together closely. And the third one is that a majority of people in the world, the majority of world public opinion, back to the U.S. invading Iraq. So 60% of Americans hold at least one of those beliefs, but depending on where they get their news, this is widely differentiated. So of those who watch Fox, 80% hold one of those beliefs. Of those who say they get their news primarily from...
Can you repeat that number?
80%. Yes. Of those who say they get their news primarily from PBS or NPR, it's in the 20s who believe one or more. And those who watch other electronic media are in between. Now, if you look at how many believe all three, you have an even sharper picture. 45% of those who say that Fox is their primary source of network news believe all three of those misperceptions. But in the overall population, only 8% of Americans are like that.
I want to say that we called Fox 2 days in a row to have them come on, but they refused. Go ahead.
That's the essence of it.
Well, so one more time, just the summary. Uh-huh. Fox, CBS, ABC, for those who believed weapons of mass destruction have been found.
For that specific one? Just a moment.
Here
we go. 33% of Fox viewers think that the U.S. has found Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. Only 11% of those who get their news from PBS or NPR do. For those who say they get their news primarily from print media, they're also on the lesser side at 17%. ABC is 19, CNN is 20, NBC is 20, CBS is 23. This is not a sunny picture for the U.S. mainstream media as a whole in terms of delivering factual information.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you for being with us, Clay Ramsey of the University of Maryland. And that does it for our show. If you want to get a copy, you can call 1-800-881-2359. It's 1-800-881-2359. Our website's democracynow.org. Looking forward to seeing people at Austin Convention Center on Saturday, and on Sunday night we'll be in Tucson at Centennial Hall, 8 o'clock, University of Arizona. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, Jeremy Scahill, Purve Sharma, Mike DeFilippo, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.